So an interesting question to carry when we come to the interchapter material within the Arcana is, how does it relate to what has gone before? You know, how does this material that we are looking at with regard to the Grand Man relate to the story of Jacob, Dinah, Simeon, and Levi? Of course, this is all the interchapter material is all about the eye, the Grand Man, which all has to do with light and reflection and, you know, all of those qualities that go with the understanding faculty. But it's just interesting in the way that this particular section was divided up, because it starts, the very opening of it, which is 45:13, is verses 30 and 31. And I'll just read those. So it said, "And Jacob said to Simeon and to Levi, 'You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitant of the land, to the Canaanite and the Perizzite. And I am a few mortals in number, and they will be gathered together against me and will smite me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house.' And they said, 'Is he going to treat our sister like a prostitute?'" What struck me about this is so through this whole kind of journey through this chapter, it's always, there's been questions around, okay, you know, what is Simeon and Levi in me? You know, what do they really represent? What does Dinah represent? Trying to get some kind of concrete illustration in my process and life that illustrates this. More and more, it's sort of coming to this idea that Simeon and Levi basically represent external forms of, well, actually the term used in the reading is religiosity. And kind of that form of religiosity, which has all the words and behavior right, but nothing internal. And so it's the things that we use to conceal proprial activity from coming into our awareness. Or it's a means of claiming some sort of spiritual value and worth to oneself, so that you don't have to work. That kind of idea. So kind of it's meritorious self-righteousness. I mean, you can throw in whatever words you like there, but that's kind of where this is sitting for me in terms of Simeon and Levi. And then Jacob represents the, well, in here he's described as representing the Lord's divine natural. And so for me, it speaks of the word at the level of the letter. The text that we are actually able to engage with is the Lord's divine natural from an internal sort of process perspective. And it seems to me that what's starting to happen here is that this is a state where that is becoming more active and is beginning to cause questions to arise in terms of the quality of those external things that belong to my religiosity. And what struck me about this here is, of course, Jacob, or the divine natural, or the word in us, is able to get us to begin to reflect on the condition or the state of this more exterior part, which is really the proprium dressed up as something spiritual. So it's our proprial investment in spiritual things, I suppose. But anyway, so that's kind of what's knocking around for me. And of course, as soon as I started looking at it in this way, it you know, there are aspects that become obvious in my life where this kind of dynamic goes on. And when self is to the fore and active, it kills off promptings that come from the Lord. Like you basically are blind and deaf to it. So it's kind of the idea of the voices that would be represented by the remnant of the most ancient church, the gentle promptings of a more celestial sort of quality get crowded out. And in that sense, they're killed. They're killed off by Simeon and Levi being active in me. And then the very last statement is fascinating. And you know, so from Simeon and Levi's perspective, it's like, is he going to treat our sister like a prostitute. So there's this kind of indignation that starts to stir up. Well, what was interesting about this in terms of relating to the text was it's pretty rough. You know, Dinah was kind of a bit of an innocent party in this whole thing, although, you know, we're not given all the detail. But then, you know, then I was pulled up about that, because just prior to this, in the last reading, we were told what Dinah represents. She represents the affection for what is evil and false. That was the representation. And then it struck me that my response to the text was Simeon and Levi's response to Jacob, to the divine natural, to what the word is actually saying. Something of a lesser quality was kicking back. And so when I realized that, it was like, so there is an actual experience of what is being described here going on. So that's, you know, and it's not fully formed, but that's kind of the threads that are stirring around this chapter and what's going on in this chapter. So the reflection element, if we go to the very last part of the reading, you know, where it talks about angels, and it was spoken about the sight of angels, the ability to cut through and see things for what they actually are. There are numbers, I don't have them on hand, but there are numbers that talk about that angels, when they are abstracted from persons, are truths. That's what they represent, because they're messengers of the Lord. What carries the Lord, who is good, is truth. So these are truths from the word. And when you think about it in that light and then read this, so replacing in thought, just transposing angels for truths from the word and evils from what's arising out of the hell of our proprium, becomes a very, it brings the reading much closer to our own process. So just thinking about that, I just read two sections. So this is 45:33. So just hold that idea as I read. Included among the wonders that occur in the next life is this, and I'll just say the next life or the other life. Often in older translations, this is translated as the other life or the life of our mind, the inner life, right? So included among the wonders that occur in the next life is this. When the angels of heaven look at evil spirits, these spirits appear altogether different to them from how the spirits appear to one another, among themselves and in their own false light, which is like that emitted from a coal fire. As has been stated, evil spirits and genii appear to themselves to exist in human form, which, in keeping with their own delusions, is not unattractive. But when the same spirits are looked at by the angels of heaven, that dim light is immediately dispelled, and they acquire an altogether different facial appearance, each spirit now having a face that expresses his particular disposition. And then it just goes on about the different faces. But how much is that like our own process, right? It just describes it to a T. And then the last bit is, but as soon as the angels cease to look at them, those spirits appear in the form which they possessed previously in their own dim light. So when the word's active in us, we see these things going on. When it's not active, carry on our merry way, thinking everything's okay, right? The angels take a look at the evil as often as they realize that they are endeavoring to leave their hells for the world of spirits, the world of spirits being our mind, with the intention of doing harm to others. As a consequence, they are found out and turned back. The reason why angelic sight is so efficient is that there is a correspondence between the sight of the understanding and that of the eye. Their sight possesses an acuteness which dispels the light of hell, and then the true nature of the evil spirit's form and disposition is visible. So, yeah, a really powerful statement about inner work and the process and activity of truths. Truths are angels within us that are constantly looking to protect us from what's flowing out of the proprium. That's the general takeaway from that, which is, you know, it's a powerful thing. How much care the Lord takes in order to protect us from our tendencies toward what is evil.